Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Ayin Hey Amud Bet, but the new Perek, Asucheret Umanim, someone who goes ahead and hires Umanim. Tosafot points out over here that the word Umanim is a more generic term for employees, which can mean one of two things. It can either mean Schir Yom, a poel, a worker, or it could mean a kablan, someone who is a contracted individual for a project or for a certain item to be finished. And so here when the Mishnah uses a socheret ha-umanim, it's in contrast to what the Gemara will do later, which is a socheret ha-poalim. When you're dealing with a poel's definition is someone who is a day laborer, someone who works by a fixed period of time, not by the project or not by the completion of a certain object. And so therefore Tosfot says when the Mishnah here uses a socher te umanim, it means ben schir yom, ben bekablanut. It means either one. It's the more generic term for someone who you are going to employ. V'tu zedzeh. And then they tricked each other or they misled each other. This the Gemara will spend a lot of time on explaining what exactly was the misleading that went on. Ein lehem al zeh al zeh letarumot. They only have complaints to each other, meaning that they have no legal recourse against each other. They can just complain about the behavior of the other party. Sachar et hachamar veta kadar. If a person hired a chamar, which is someone who drives a donkey, or basically a moving company, et a kadar, usually that would mean someone who makes pottery or potter, that is selling his pottery. But you can see over here, Rashi indicates that the kadar is really a wagon driver. And Tosafot says that there was an alternate girsa in the Mishnah, which is a karar, which was with two reshes, and that is a bal karon, someone who runs a wagon. But he says that the girsa that we have that says kadar in it is because maybe those people who brought their pottery to market usually had a wagon to bring their pottery to market, but some sort of transport or means of transport. If they hired for priprin, Vichalilin, the kalau, the mate. In this case, if he hired any of those individuals to bring priperin, as Rashi says over here, those are wood that is cut, shaved, and sanded, and it's ready to use wood for building. Or they asked him to bring flutes for the chatan and kala to celebrate, or for a mate in order to be mikonein, to have the eulogies and the sad music that would go along with that. Or he hired poalim lalot pishtano mina mishra. Or he hired workers to take his flax out of the vat that they are soaking in. Behold davar shavad. So the key element here is something which is time sensitive. So in this case, the bringing of the wood, Tosafot claims, davar avud chashivla, shataz mano hulasot. He needed to build now. He had maybe the workers here, the contractor here, and then the supplies don't show up. That's a davar avud. Then you have the kala or the mate. Those are time sensitive items. If you don't bring the flutes in time for that, obviously, it's not meaningful after that point to bring the flutes. Or if you have the workers that are taking the flax out of the water, if they don't take it out of the vat that they're soaking in, then the flax will go bad. It will ruin. So all of these cases, it's time sensitive. Bechazru behem. And they backed out of the job. Makom she'ein sham adam. If there's nobody else to replace them and he can't find someone else to hire, William suggests that there's a diok out of the word makom to suggest that it's not necessarily that they have to be poalim there. It just has to be that they normally are poalim in this location, and therefore when they back out, they have expectations that they can be replaced, even though in the end, in reality, it's not the case. But if this is the normal reality in this situation, that's enough, and he's medayek that out of the word makom. So cher lehem, either he can pay up or pay an exorbitant amount to bring in someone else to replace them, omita'an, or he can mislead them, which we'll discuss in the Gemara, that he can tell them that he'll pay them a huge amount, and then he doesn't have to pay them. In that case, he has the upper hand because they backed out and left him high and dry, and because of that, he can either hire someone at an expensive rate and then charge it to them, or he can trick them into continuing or completing the work that he needs and then just pay them whatever he had promised up front because they left him in a position where he's going to have sustained huge losses. Now, asocherta umanim vechazru behen, person who hires individuals to work and then they back out. And Rashi over here suggests that we're speaking about lasot melacha bekablanut bekach bekach. At this point in the Mishnah, we're switching over to a kablan, someone who has taken on a fixed piece of work. Until now, we were talking about poalim, we were talking about workers. The second thing Rashi says also over here is, b'chazru behen lachar she'asu miktzat, after they already began the work. So this is different from the beginning of the Mishnah in two ways. Number one is it's only speaking about a kablan now, not about a poel, not about a day laborer. And number two is you have to actually start the work to be on the hook. The reason for that is that a poel has the right to walk out of the job, and as we'll see in the Gemara in tomorrow's daf, where there are two lishonot of how to explain the Mishnah, but in general, a day laborer has a right to walk away from the work and does not have yado al tachtona. And therefore, Rashi explains that the latter half of the Mishnah is speaking about a kablan. In addition to that, he has to have started the work in order for that to be a binding agreement or for him to have recourse in these situations. On the other hand, in the first part of the Mishnah, where it's a davar aved, where it's something that would be lost, even if they don't start in the work, he does have recourse against them because of the fact that he's going to suffer monetary loss in this situation. Then they have the worst of the situations, which means that if we have to now hire someone to replace them, they will get the lower of what it remains to pay after they paid for the replacement workers, or the amount of time that they had worked, what they deserve in that period of time. Ima balabait choser bo, on the other hand, if the owner, the employer, backs out, yado al tachtona, then he has the position where he has the lower hand, and the workers have the upper hand, and therefore they'll get the higher of the amount of work that they've completed based on the original salary, or they'll get whatever remains after he hires workers to complete his work. So they'll get the higher of those two items. An example would be, for instance, he hires them to work for him for 10, and then halfway through, they decide they want to walk off the job. So now, in terms of the work they did vis-a-vis the salary that they had agreed to originally, they deserve 5 because they did half the work. But now he's going to go out and have to hire someone. If it costs him more to hire someone than 5, then he'll pay whatever he has to pay, 6, 7 for the other person. And those that did the work on the first half will only get 3, 4, depending whatever's left over from the original 10. On the other hand, if he goes out and hires someone for 4, so it cost them less to finish the job after they walked off of it. Nevertheless, they still only get the 5 that they deserve based on the original agreement. That's what it means, that they have the lower hand and the Baal Bayit has the upper hand. And the same would be true in the reverse. Though Rashi does add the fact that if the Baal Bayit is the one who backed out and the remainder of the work only cost him 2.5, in our example where he had promised them 10 for the full amount, and then he pulls out of the deal halfway through, then he has to pay them the 7.5 now, and not just the 50%. The reason being, as Rashi notes, is because otherwise the Poalim lose out. They cannot get rehired now at the higher price because prices for Poalim have dropped. And if that's the case, if he pulls out at the 50% mark and pays them 5, they're only going to be able to be hired for 2.5. And therefore he is causing them to sustain a loss because of his inappropriate behavior. Therefore Rashi believes that in a case where he only has to spend 2.5 to finish it, he pays them 7.5. If he has to pay 5 to finish it, or if he has to pay more to finish it, then he's got to pay them the 50% that they completed. But as the Baal Yatosafot point out, he doesn't have to pay them the higher rate now for what the work would be, because actually it's to their advantage to get fired. They'll get the 5 that they were entitled to for working the 50%. Now they can hire themselves out at a higher rate to someone else. And so they'll actually make more for the same period of time. The Baal Yatosafot do question Rashi's position here because of the fact that the Gemara on tomorrow's daf indicates that the Baal Bayit has an incentive to back out of the deal when the price of Poalim has dropped, because he can dismiss these Poalim at the percentage of what they've completed and then have rehire Poalim at a much cheaper rate. According to Rashi, he wouldn't benefit from that because he would have to pay them whatever the differential was between the original agreement and what it cost him to finish the deal. And so Tosfot says that makes it a little hard to explain Rashi's position here, and therefore it might be that you only have to pay the 50% that they completed. Tosfot in the end says that maybe Rashi's right, and the reason that he might want to break up the deal, not monetary, but rather that they've had some sort of disagreement between them. And that's why he wants to disband their relationship. But there are Rishonim who disagree with Rashi because of this issue, where the Gemara further on seems to indicate that the Baal Bayit will benefit from backing out of the transaction. And then we have here a statement that follows this, which is anybody who changes something, then also they have the lower hand. They do not have the upper hand in the situation. We learned about this in Baba Kama with regards to an Uman who's supposed to dye some sort of material for someone, and he dyes it the wrong color. In that case, he has the lower hand, meaning that he either gets the lower of the yitziah, his costs, or shevach, the benefit that he created in the item that he did wrongly. And anybody who backs out of a contract or a situation, he always has the worst situation. He doesn't have the claim. The other party has the upper hand in those situations. One thing which is interesting is that the Mishnah says that if they start working and then they back out of the work, then yadam al tachtona, then they have the worst of the two situations. But if they don't start the work and they just walk away from the deal, then ein lo ela tarumot. Then he only has complaints about them. So that's interesting because it turns out that they're better off not starting the work than starting the work. So there are rishonim, like the Ritva, that suggest that walking away from the work is much more difficult because once you begin the work, a person doesn't want to stop it in the middle. And therefore, walking away in the middle is more serious than not starting at all. And then the other thing is that the Ramban points out, which is that the Mishnah gives him the right to hire other people to replace them or to trick them into finishing the job when it's a Davar Aved. Over there, the Ramban suggests that those are his rights while he's still in the work. But if he doesn't take up those rights and simply finishes it off or does whatever he does without hiring other workers or without forcing them to work, then he has no legal claim or recourse after the fact for the damages done. So his right is to take care of it at the time of the situation. He doesn't have a right afterwards to then try to make a legal claim against them. Although there are other Rishonim that suggest that he does have a right over here to make a claim, which we're going to see later on today's daf. If you hold like Rabbi Meir and you're dying dine de garmi, then as a din de garmi, the loss that was caused here, they have a hand in causing this loss to him. And therefore, he might have legal recourse against them because of the loss that they created for him. All right. Now the Gemara continues and says, Chazru ze baze loktani, elehitu ze etze. The Mishnah, when it describes the interaction in the first line of the Mishnah between the Baal and the Poalim, it doesn't say that they backed out. The word or the term chazru would indicate that one of the two parties backed out of their agreement. The fact that the Mishnah does not use that means that it's not an interaction between the employer and the employees, because otherwise the term chazru would have been appropriate. The fact that the Mishnah says hitu et zedzeh, that they tricked each other, misled each other, da'atu po'alim ahadodi. It means that the workers did that to themselves or to each other, which means that it's not the employer that's the problem here. There's some sort of middleman that is causing the problem. Hechi dami, what's that situation? Darmalei balabait zil ogar li po'alim. So the balabait says to this contractor, in a sense, individual who can bring po'alim to the work, says, go hire for me po'alim. Vazel ihu vatinu. And he went ahead and misled them. Hey chidami, what was the misleading information he gave them? Ida amarle balabayit ba'arba'a. If the balabayit says go out and hire them for zuz, and then ve'ihu amarluhu b'tzlata, and he said to them that he's willing to pay you three, taromet maya vidite. What type of complaint can they have? Savor v'kabil. They accepted the salary that he had offered. You know, even though the balabayit was willing to pay more, when he went ahead and hired them at the three instead of the four, they were willing to do the work or accept the work at that price. Since they were willing to accept the work at that price, what type of complaint then they can have? What, that he could have gotten them more money? That's not his job. His job was to hire them, and they were willing employees at that time. Idam ale balabayit bitzlato. On the other hand, if the balabayit said, I'll pay three, zuz, ba'azil ihu amalehu ba'arba, and then this middleman promises them more, four, hey chidami. Again, what is the scenario? Ida amar luhu scharchem alai. If the middleman says, I'll pay you, nativ luhu mididei. He's going to have to make up the difference on his own. Titania, asocher tapuel lasot bishalo. Person hires a worker to work in his own property. Vehar eyu bishoch haviro. And instead he shows him and tells him to go work in his friend's field. Notein lo scharo mishulam. He has to pay him whatever he promised him because he hired him and he's got to pay him. Bechuzer venotel mi balabait ma shehe hanahu. And then he goes back to the person whose property he did this for. Over here, he hired these workers and he put them in someone else's property. And when he put them into this person's property, he obviously benefited this individual. So from that sense, he has recourse against the individual just because he did him or improved their property. So he can go and ask him for the compensation for the amount that he benefited him. But again, there, the person who hired them is on the hook for the differential. So that can't be the explanation of the Mishnah. Because again, if the explanation of the Mishnah is that the Balabayit offered more, and then this intermediary told them they would get hired for less, they accepted that lower salary, and that's it. On the other hand, if he offered them more than the Balabayit, if he put himself between the Balabayit and the workers, then he's responsible for the differential. And then he can go back to the Balabayit and ask him to get paid for the benefit that he gave him. So the Balabayit will pay him three, and he'll pay the workers four. So then why do the workers have any complaint? They're getting paid whatever they were promised. So here's the first answer of the Gemara, Lo tzricha, damalu scharchem al balabayit. He said that the Baal HaBayit is going to pay you. So the Baal HaBayit had offered to hire at 3. He went ahead and offered at 4. And so now they go back, and the only recourse they have is against the Baal HaBayit, because this intermediary said the Baal HaBayit is going to pay you. So he didn't put himself in between to be liable for that differential. So then now the Baal HaBayit said, I only offered 3. He misled you and told you 4. Why don't we just go see what the market price for workers is? Because if the market price is 4, then the Baal HaBayit has to pay 4 in the end. He got the work done, and it was worth 4. He's got to pay for it. If workers are hired at 3, then the workers can't get more than that. It says, there's some people hire out at 4, some people hire out at 3. So there is a range of prices which workers are hired at. Some are hired at 3, some are hired at 4. So the Amrulei, they can say to him, Ilav da'amartlan ba'arba'a, tachinon mitgarinan ba'arba'a. Had you not promised us 4, we would have gone somewhere else and gotten the 4. We would have searched for the employers that are paying 4. The only reason we agreed to work for you was because you said 4. I mean, he didn't say 4, the intermediary said 4, but that's their complaint. Their complaint is, we could have been hired out by someone who pays 4. Now we're only going to get paid 3. But in the end, they have no recourse because it's the Baal HaBayit only promised 3, and that is supported by the market. If that's the case, he can pay them 3, and they have a complaint against an intermediary who misled them. So I would call that, this is answer A1, which is the first answer revolves around this idea that the intermediary promised them more money than the Baal HaBayit had offered. And in the first scenario here, the market would have supported either price. And so therefore we can't determine by the market price, and therefore the Baal HaBayit pays what he promised, and the workers, employees, have a complaint on the intermediary who misled them. Ibai Deima, so this is A2, which is Ibai Deima Hacha b'Baal HaBayit Askinan. The employee is an owner of fields. He's not regularly a laborer. That's not his only means of income. Damarlei, ilav damartlan ba'arba'a, avazila ban milta litgure. Says, unless I get paid a high enough price, I don't hire myself out. It's beneath my dignity. I'm not a worker that needs work no matter what, or income no matter what. If you pay a high enough price, then it's worthwhile for me to engage in working, and I will work. But the fact is that here, it wasn't worth it for me at 3, it was worth it to me at 4. So now that you told me 4, that's why I went to work. Now the Baal HaBayit's only paying me 3. And so that's his taromet, that's his complaint against this intermediary, that he put him into work that he wouldn't have otherwise done had he known that the compensation was only 3 instead of 4. Vibai Dema, here's the third possibility, this is A3, answer for the Mishnah. The olam bipoalim askinan. We're dealing with workers, not a owner of a field like the previous answer. Damilei, kemen damartlan ba'arba'a, tarchinan vavdinan lecha vita shapirta. Since you paid us the higher of the market rate out there, you could pay 3, you could have paid 4. Since you were paying us 4, we did a nicer job, or our product that we produced was even better. So Gemara says, v'lech zei avitatayu. So why don't we go check their work, and we'll see. If they really did better work, maybe he should have to pay the extra amount. Gemara says, berifka. It's a case where they were digging ditches on his behalf, ditches around the field. Gemara says, rifka nami midyada yoda. You can go and check a ditch, the way that they dug it, the way that the walls are structured, the way that they did the work. You can see whether it was worthy of a higher price or a lower price. It says, the malumayo. The whole point of digging the ditches was to have water flow through them, and that's what's there now, water, and you can't see the quality of the construction. Below your idea, and therefore it's not obvious whether they did better work or not. And therefore they only have taromet, they only have a complaint against the intermediary who had promised them 4, and meantime the Baal HaBayit's only paying them 3. And they said we worked harder, or we did better quality work in exchange for that higher price, but now they're only getting the lower price, and that's their taromet. So those are the first three answers as to how to explain the Mishnah. They're all a subcategory of the scenario in which the Baal HaBayit promises 3, and the intermediary promises the workers 4. And the reason that the workers don't have recourse in each of these cases is for the reasons here. One is that either the market supports both 3 and 4, therefore, they don't have a claim that they are really worth 4, and he have to pay 4. And since they're both, he could pay them the 3 and discharge his obligation as the employer. And their complaint against the intermediary is that they could have found work for 4. Instead, now they're only getting paid 3. The second possibility under that category was the fact that he was a Baal HaBayit. He wasn't usually a laborer. He only hired himself out if the premium was high enough. And since the intermediary promised him the higher price, he was willing to do it. But then when he finds out he gets paid the lower price, then he's not happy about that because he wouldn't have worked for the lower price. So he has taromet against the intermediary. The Baal Bayit's not on the hook for any more than he promised, because that's what he promised to pay. And the third answer under this category is that the Po'alim said that they did a higher quality of work because they thought they were getting paid more. The Baal Bayit only promised them three. We have no way to investigate or check the quality of the work. In Ochanami, if the work quality was better, they might have a claim here for more money because they did work that was valued at a higher price. But if we can't check it or there's no way to determine that, then they only have a complaint against the intermediary who misled them with the higher price. And the Baal Bayit says, I paid for what I asked for, and I'm going to pay the three. And they have a complaint about the four, despite the fact that they're claiming that they did a higher quality work. So now the Gemara goes back and offers a B category or way to explain the Mishnah, which is Ibai Teima, Lolam Damarle Baal Bayit Ba'arba'a. The Baal Bayit promised them four, Fazo Iu Amarlu Betlata. And the intermediary hired them at three, Ukde Amar. But we already tried to use this scenario and said it didn't work because Savar VeKabil. Because the workers accepted the lower price. Once they accepted the lower price, then what claim do they have against the Baal Bayit? Because they were willing to be hired at that price. Even though the Baal Bayit was willing to pay them for, they have no recourse here because they could have said no. The fact that they said yes makes them responsible to do the work at that lower level. The answer to that is, Damrilei, Leit Lach Al Timna Tov Mi Baalav. Don't you have the Pasuk in Mishlei which says, don't hold back goodness from its owner. So over here, what they're suggesting is, we could have made more, and it would have been no skin off your back if we made more for the same work. And therefore, you, in a sense, withheld this goodness from us, this benefit from us, even though we accepted the lower price. But we could have been hired at the higher price. And in essence, you really just hurt us because of the fact that you got us at the lower price. And Al Timna Tov Mi Baalav, don't withhold goodness from a person who could be the beneficiary of that goodness, if there's no reason. The Baal Bayit was willing to pay, we were willing to work, and all the thing that you did was make the cost of our labor lower without any benefit. You basically just withheld from us that what we could have benefited from. So if you remember back on Chav Dalet Amud Bet, when we dealt with Lifnim Yishurat Adin, so over there, Tosafot gave three different categories of what's considered to do something good. One of those categories was the Man Telech B'Derech Tovim, is that you should do the right thing. And so this is another type of, I would call it, not lifnim mishurat adin, because here I'm not talking about an obligation, but it's really lifnim mishurat adin in reverse, which is that when you have the opportunity to make someone the beneficiary of something, and you cause that to be withheld unnecessarily, then there's also a loss here. Again, mishurat adin, the letter of the law, they accepted the lower salary. And so therefore there's no obligations here. Their complaint against the individual is that they could have garnered the higher price and nobody would have been upset. Almost as in, and so his withholding of that goodness from them is the problem over here, or that's their complaint. And that complaint is basically, if you know you could get us better pricing, if you know you could do good for someone, why not do that good for someone instead of withholding from him? And therefore it has echoes of what we discussed in Toswin and Chav Dalet Amud Bet with regards to the Lifnim Mishurat Adin, that sometimes there is this idea of Aman Lehelech B'Derech Tovim, that there is this idea of doing good when you don't lose anything from it. That there's a value in doing Lifnim Mishurat Adin when it doesn't cost you anything. And so over here, it doesn't cost them anything to give them the higher salary because the Baal Bayit was willing to pay that higher salary. So where it says, Pshita, Iyamar Leh Baal Bayit B'Tlata, that if he told, the Baal Bayit told him to go hire for three. Vazo iu amalu be'arba'a. And then he goes out and tells the workers, he'll pay you four. Ve'amri lei. And they say to him, Kamosha amar Baal Bayit. And they say to him, whatever the Baal Bayit said, that's what we'll do. Da'atayu iluya. They have in mind to take the higher of the two salaries. Because when they say we're relying on the Baal Bayit, they're not saying we're relying on the Baal Bayit as opposed to what you said. All they're saying is, if the Baal Bayit offered more, then we're relying on the Baal Bayit. So we want the higher of what you said, or what the Baal Bayit says. So Gemara says, if that's the way that they termed their acceptance of the salary, then if the Baal Bayit offered three and he offered four, they're entitled to four in that case, because they said we get the higher of what you offered, or what the Baal Bayit offered. And obviously this is in a case where the intermediary accepted the responsibility for the salaries of those individuals, because that's why he's going to be possibly on the hook for that amount. The question comes up, if the Baal Bayit told this intermediary that he'll pay four, and then he went ahead and told them that I'll pay you three, Kamashe Amar Balabait, and then they say whatever the Balabait said, Mai. Then what do we think? Adibura Diday Kamasamche? Do they rely on what he told them? Damarle Mehemet Lan, Hachi Amar Balabait, that they say basically, we believe you as to what the Balabait offered over here, and now that you're saying three, that's what we will assume the Balabait offered. Odilma Adibura de Balabait Kasamche, or do they really rely on what the Balabait said, and therefore they will garner the higher amount, the four that the Balabait had offered, even though he only told them three. So the question is, in a scenario where he is misleading them, they don't know that, so they say we rely on the Balabait. So when they say we rely on the Balabait, does that mean that we rely that you're telling us what the Balabait said? Or does that mean that we rely on the Balabait because he's might have given more than you offered? Obviously, the difference will be whether they're entitled to the four that the Balabait offered over here versus the three that the intermediary put forth. Again, in the reverse case, where the intermediary has the higher price, then the Gemara was certain in that case when they say we rely on the Balabait, they were not relying on the Balabait to lower their salary. And so therefore, they garner the higher price that was offered by the intermediary. Over here, where it's the reverse, and the intermediary is offering them the lower price and the Balabait the higher price, and they say we rely on the Balabait, what's the meaning of that? Gemara says, Tashma. Let's learn it from this case in Gitin. The woman says, Haveli Giti. She tells a shliach, she tells an agent, go ahead and bring me my get, which is an indication of holacha, that the shliach should be a shliach to holacha, which means a shliach for the delivery of the get. Now the truth is, the woman is not empowered to make a shliach into a shliach de holacha, because her role in the divorce is to accept the get. So she can either accept the get herself, or she can have an agent accept it on her behalf. But when she goes out and instructs a shliach, haveli giti, bring me my get, which is not that accepted on my behalf, but rather be holacha, she doesn't have a right to make the agent into a proxy to bring the get on behalf of the husband. The husband can do that. He can make a shliach to holacha. The husband can have an agent that is taking it and delivering on his behalf. That's what the woman said. The shliach shows up by the husband and says, V'ishtachamra hitkabel li giti. Your wife told me to accept the get on her behalf. V'hu omer, and he says to the shliach, Helech kemashamra. Take it the way that she said. Even if the get reaches the woman herself, Eina migureshet. She is not divorced. Shmamina adibura didei kasamich. It's clear here that he must be relying on what the shaliach, the agent, said. Because if when he said, do whatever she said, he was relying on her original statement that she had said to the shliach, to the agent, was, bring me my get, which means holacha. The shliach is an agent of delivery. Now, if the husband says, I'm relying on what she said, and we really rely on literally what she said, then the agent now is an agent, the holacha, and the husband can appoint them as an agent, the holacha, and it would have worked. Once the woman received the get, she would have been divorced. The problem here is that he's relying on what the agent told him the woman said. He told him the woman said, accept the get on my behalf. So the husband hands the get to the shliach, to this agent, thinking he's a recipient on behalf of the wife. Meantime, the wife never said such a thing. So the get is moving from the husband to the wife through a proxy who is not empowered by either party. If that's the case, that's why the get fails over here. All is dependent, or is true, if he was reliant on what the agent told him. And that's how we prove from here. That adibura didei kasamich, that he is relying on that statement of the agent. So you see, in a situation where you have the original principal and an agent, and the agent miscommunicates the information, when the husband responds to that, we believe that whatever the agent said is true, and the husband's relying on the agent's statement, not on what the woman said originally or the principal said originally. So in our case, the equivalent would have been the same thing, which is that here by the intermediary, when he says three and the Balabait says four and they say we're relying on the Balabait, what they meant is we're relying on the Balabait based on what you said to us the Balabait said. And therefore they would only garner three in that case and not four. The Gemara says, if you believe in this scenario of the get that he is really relying on what the woman said originally, the principal said originally, then at least if the get reaches her hand, she should be divorced in that situation because he relied on what she said originally. The shliach is now a shliach to holacha because that's what the woman had asked the husband to do originally. And then when it reaches her hand, it will become a get because the shliach to holacha, the delivery agent, is now handing it to the woman. and therefore it goes from the husband's hand to the wife's hand, it would have been a good get. So Rav Ashi, hachi ashto. You cannot compare the cases over here. It says, Bishloma, he says, if that which we saw in Gitin was actually the other case, iitmar ipcha, was just the opposite, where she said, hitkabel li giti, she said, go and accept the get on my behalf. She made the agent into an agent of receipt. Vishtachamra, when the agent went and told the husband what he was supposed to be doing, haveli giti. He tells the husband that the wife wanted him to make the shliach into a shliach laholacha. V'omer heloich kamo shamra. And then he says, do whatever she said. V'amar Rav Nachman, amar Rabavu, amar Rav. So in that case, if they said the following, mishiagia get the ado migureshet, if they say that once the get reaches the hand of the agent, she is divorced immediately, alma dibura dida kasamich. That would have proven that we were relying on what she said. And her original statement was that the shliach be a recipient on her behalf. That means that as soon as the husband hands it to the shliach, the agent of receipt, then it's done. The get is done. So that would have proved that we listened to her and her original statement. Inami, if on the other hand, mishiagia get the adam migureshet, if they said that the halacha is that once the get reached her hand, she is divorced, then alma dibra didei kasamich. Then you would have proven that they are relying on the word of the agent. And when he says, I'm relying on what she said, it means your interpretation or your conveying of what she said. And therefore the shliach is a shliach to holacha. If it's a shliach to holacha, then the woman is divorced once the get reaches her. So had that been the scenario, and the two possible outcomes are what we demonstrated over here, then you would have been able to determine whether you rely on the woman herself, or whether you rely on the agent's communication of what the woman said. Elohotam. In the scenario that you brought, that you cannot prove anything from, mishum, the akar shliach lishlichute legamre. In that case, the shliach completely abrogated his agency. Damale shliach the kabbalah havina, leholacha lo havina. Because in that case, he's saying, I'm willing to be an agent for acceptance. I'm not willing to be an agent for conveying the item. The difference being is, what is the obligation of the shliach in this case? The shliach is simply an agent to receive the get. Then when he goes to the husband and receives the get, he's done, in a sense, with his mission. Yeah, he's supposed to bring it back to the woman, but he can do that at his leisure. The get and the effectiveness of the divorce is immediate once he receives the get, and he's, in his essence, off the hook at that point in time. On the other hand, if he's a shliach l'holacha, which means that he's an agent to deliver the get to the woman, that means he has to undertake delivering it and getting it to the woman in order for it to be an effective get. So in that case, the tircha, or the undertaking, is much more significant. And so what Rav Ashi is pointing out is that the case that you brought is not a proof, because in that case, the woman asked the shliach to be a shliach l'holacha. She can't appoint him, but she wanted the husband to make him into a shliach for delivery. The agent instead said, I don't want to be an agent for delivery, I want to be an agent to receive. So he downgraded the undertaking or the actions he would require, and in doing so, he basically said, I have no interest in being a shliach l'holacha. And by doing that, we eliminated one possibility of what his job could be. Since his terms were less burdensome on himself, we say basically he's unwilling to undertake the other job. And then when the husband hands him the get, and he actually does take it back to the woman, even though he changed his mind after the fact and said, you know what, all right, I'll take it back to her, that doesn't change the fact that his proposition to the husband was simply, I'm here to be a recipient of the get, I'm not here to be a messenger to deliver the get. And for that reason, we say that the husband has no choice there, but to view him as a shliach for receipt and not a shliach for holacha, because he didn't offer that as one of the options. In that case, it's a problem, because the woman never appointed him as an agent of receipt. The husband cannot appoint him as an agent of receipt, and therefore there's nobody making him into an agent. In the scenario here, where he upgraded his undertaking, the woman said, you be a shliach to receive it, and he goes and volunteers to not only receive it, but to deliver it to the woman, then he's upgrading the undertaking he's willing to engage in. And in that case, you could then be discerning as to whether we say the get's effective immediately, or is the get effective only when it reaches the woman. Then we would be able to determine whether he was relying on the agent's communication of what the woman said, or literally what the woman said. So the problem is that that's not the scenario that was brought. And the scenario that you did bring is limited because of the fact that the agent basically eliminated himself from a portion of what could have possibly happened here. And so the outcome is not because we say, oh, we rely on the agent's communication, but rather it's because the agent said, I'm not going to do anything else. So there's only one option for the agent to be an agent of receipt. In that case, it's a problem because the woman never appointed him as an agent of receipt. The husband cannot appoint him as an agent of receipt, and therefore there's nobody making him into an agent. He's a no man's land. When the husband hands it to him and then he hands it to the woman, nothing's happened because it hasn't gone from the hand of the husband directly to the hand of the woman. So that's why that's the outcome of the halacha there, that there's no get. But in the case here, had this been the scenario that you had, then you would have been able to prove something from it. But that's not the scenario, and therefore Rav Ashi says you can't prove anything to our case from that case by gitin. All right, so now the Gemara now gives a third alternative as to how to answer the Mishnah, which is we had answer A, which had three subcategories. The Baal Bayit offered three, and the intermediary offered four. And the intermediary said the Baal Bayit will pay you. So he didn't put himself on the hook. And then it turns out that the Baal Bayit's only paying three. So we explained in three different scenarios, those were the three subcategories of A, as to why in those scenarios they only had taromet, they only had complaints and not recourse. We have a second answer, which was the reverse. It was a scenario in which the Baal Bayit had offered four and the intermediary only offered three. And even though they accepted the work at three, we still said that there was taromet because of Al Timna Tov Mi Baalav. Don't withhold good things from people and you can offer them something good. Why should you not give them the benefit of that? And you withheld that from us because we could have gotten four and you only gave us three. Now here's the third possibility, which is Haitana Chazru Nami Hitu Karile. The original diuk of the Gemara was that the Mishnah didn't say Chazru, but rather Hitu. And therefore it must not be talking about a relationship between the employer and employee, but there is an intermediary in there. Here the Gemara backs away from that and says, maybe our Tana uses the word hitu, even though it means chazru. Even though it really is about the employer-employee relationship. The ketanyo, hasucheret ha-umanim, v'hitu et balabayit, or balabayit hita'a utan. So you see here the verb hitu is used even in describing the relationship between the employer and employee. So over here, hitu et balabayit, the employees misled the balabayit, the owner, or balabayit hita'a utan, or the owner-employer misled the employees. They only have complaints against each other. Where is that true? Where is it when they back out of the work that they only have complaints? That's shelo halchu. That's if they didn't start and go out to do the work. If the haulers went and do the work that he had employed them, they get there and there's no wheat to transport. But he had hired them to come transport the wheat. They get there and there's no wheat. So they're engaged in the work. They started the work. And now there's nothing to do. He hired them to water the field. The workers get to the field and it's all moist. It's all wet. He has to pay them their full salary. So the truth is he has to pay them because he promised to pay them. But the other half of the story is that these workers now have to work a lot less. The haulers are coming back with an empty truck. They're coming back with a chamor that's not loaded. So that's easier work for them. So you give some sort of discount to the original price he promised them because they didn't have to work as hard for the service that they had promised to provide. So he has to pay them fully with a discount for the fact that they had an easier time doing whatever it is. And the same thing is true with regards to the poalim. Because ain't no domet osem melacha do yoshevu batel. It's much different to have to water the field and get paid for watering the field versus getting paid for watering the field when you did absolutely nothing. So in that case, whatever that discount is that workers are willing to accept to not have to engage in the work, that he will be able to pay them at that discounted amount. But otherwise, he has to pay them in full because they showed up to work and he didn't provide for them. Tosvot notes that the halchu and lo halchu over here is lav dafka. And that is not the determining factor as to whether the employees here are engaged and have to be compensated if the Baal Bayit cancels on them. Because it really has to do with the ability to replace the work that they have. If the work is replaceable, then the Baal Bayit is not chayav to them. If the work is not replaceable, meaning that they're not going to earn money that day, then Baal Bayit is responsible to compensate them. And the reason that the Braita used this issue of halchu and lo halchu is because that's orcha de milta. That's the normal way that these things happen, which is that they are only engaged and can't back out of and cannot get other work. Is once they've gone out there and committed themselves to this work, they're not going to get the other work. But not that that is the defining moment. On the other hand, the Ramban disagrees with the Balei HaTosafot and says that the halicha over here is significant because it makes it into a kinyan. And once they've gone, that is a commitment in which the Baal Bayit now is obligated to pay them. And if he backs out at that point in time, they have a right to make a claim against them, even if they can find other work, because the going to the job is a commitment or a kinyan. And so unlike the Tosafot, it's simply that this is considered to be the beginning of their work or a kinyan for them to engage in this work, and therefore the Baal Bayit must pay them in that case. When is that true? That's only if they didn't start the work yet. Once they have begun the work, then you have to assess what they have done. As Rashi notes over here, there's a shift in the Braita. Until now in the Braita, we were speaking about Poalim. We were speaking about day laborers, people who were hired for a particular time period to do something. Over here, the Braita was shifting over to Kablanim, people who were hired to produce a certain product, to do a certain amount of work that involved a particular objective. On the other hand, the Nemuka Yosef says the distinction between the first half of the Mishnah and the second half of the Mishnah has to do with who is backing out of the melacha. And that is that in the first half of the Mishnah, it is the employer that is backing out. And therefore, halchu is the commitment, similar to what the Ramban said, that halchu is a form of kinyan, and therefore the Baal HaBayit is on the hook. On the other hand, if it is the poalim that are backing out, their commitment starts once they've begun the work, not in a case where they simply went out there, but in a case where they've actually begun the work. And therefore, it's not a distinction between Poalim and Kablanim, but a distinction as to who is backing out of their commitment here. And the lopsided nature of this agreement, whereby the Poalim have more protection, I mean, that simply they're going out there gives them this protection, versus for the Baal HaBayit, he's only protected if they begin the work, and then if it's a davar aved, or versus whether he can hire other people to replace them, is premised on what we're going to see in tomorrow's daf, that the Poalim are protected by the Torah. They are the individuals at the lowest rung of the social ladder. They are the ones that can be taken advantage of, and they're the ones who are really dependent on this work. Therefore, the Torah provides them with extra protections, whether those are midoraita, whether those are midrabanan, in order to ensure that they're not taken advantage of because of their difficult economic situation, and because it's literally the essentials of their livelihood, and if they lose out in these cases, they really may not be able to support themselves or their families. And so therefore, they are afforded a better circumstance or setup in order to protect them versus the employer. So here, if they began the work with kablanut or contracting, then in that case, if they walk away from the work, shamilein mashasu, we assess what they did. Ketzad, what is the description of that? Kablu kamaliktor, if they accepted the job to cut down or harvest the wheat, bishnei slaim, katsru chetzia, they ended up harvesting half of it, veinichu chetzia, and then they leave the remainder half. Begid larog, they were hired to weave an article of clothing, bishnei slaim. If they wove half of it, and they left the other half undone, you assess what they had done. Even though the completion of their work will require 6 dinarim, which is really a sela and a half. Remember, there are 4 dinar and a sela. So 6 dinarim means 1.5 sela of work that needs to be completed. He pays them the half the work they did. He hired them to do the whole work for 2. They did half of it. He pays them 50% of their salary, a sela. O yigmiru melachtan, or the other option is they finish their work, vitlushne slayim, and they get the 2 sela. So even though the completion of their work will require 1.5 sela, nevertheless, the deal was for 2 sela. You only did 50% of the work. You get 50% of what you were hired to do. You want to get the full 2 sela, finish up the work, and you'll get your 2 sela. Vim sela, noten lahem sela. And if it is a sela, he gives them a sela. So the way that you would read this without the emendation of the gra is, Vim sela, if the remaining work was worth a sela, then noten lahem sela. They get that same sela, the 50%. Now then the gra writes, im shekel, if it's worth a shekel is half a sela, or 2 dinar, which means that even though the remainder of the work would only require a shekel or half a sela to finish, still they're only entitled to a sela, which is a quarter of the total price that they were promised. Nevertheless, they will only garner a sela, because he promised them 2 sela for the whole work. They get the 50% price as a sela. Now we look at what it takes to complete the item. If the completion of the work would require paying 1.5 sela, then notein lahem shekel. He gives them half a sela because he's got to complete the work. And completing the work is going to cost them that money. This is what you noted. Therefore, they only get the difference between what it'll cost them to finish versus what he had promised them in totality. Or if they want to get paid their two sela, just finish up the work. Like the way Argamar has the gear says, im sela, notain lam sela. If it requires a sela to finish it, then he gives them a sela. On the other hand, the way that the gro amends it, it is im shekel. If it only requires him 2 dinar to finish it, which means a quarter of the price to finish it, still they only get a sela. They only get the half that they had finished. They don't get the difference between the total value and what it would cost him to finish it up. So here you basically have a machloket between the Tanakam and Rabbi Dosa. Rabbi Dosa is similar to the Tana of our Mishnah, that Yado al Tachtona, that you get the worst of the two scenarios. Since the workers walked out on the work, they're going to get the lesser of 50% of the total amount he promised them, or the remainder after he's paid for the other 50% to be completed. So in the case where it cost him a sela and a half to complete, they're only going to get a half sela even though they did 50% of the work. The other hand, if it only cost them a shekel to complete, a half sela to complete, still they'll only get a sela even though the total amount should have been 2 sela because yadam ala tachtona. They walked off the job, they get the lesser of the sela or whatever the remainder is after he finishes the job. On the other hand, the Tanakama believes that you get paid on a pro rata basis. You offered 2 sela, you finish 50% of the work, you get your sela, because it's always pro rata. Whatever you finished, you get paid for. And so that's the Tanakama's view, that you always get paid a sela, because you did 50% of the work, you were promised 2 sela for the whole work, therefore at 1 sela, that's the pro rata amount for the 50% of the work you did. Now again, Bamed Vayim Amurim, when is that true? But Davar She'enu Avut. That is only true when it's something that is not time sensitive. About davar avud, socher lehem o mita'an. Similar to our Mishnah, if it's time sensitive, then he can either hire people at some egregious price to finish it off, o mita'an, or he can trick them into finishing that. Ketzad mita'an, how does he do that? As he tricked them? Omer lehen sela katzatzti lehem, bo tlush taim. He says, I promised you a sela to finish the work, I'll pay you 2 now instead. Ve'ad kama socher lehem, how much can he pay to replace them? And they'll be responsible for it. Ad 40 or 50 zuz. Even if it's 40 or 50 times the normal salary, he can just pay it out, get someone to finish the work, and charge them from that excess because he is in a bind. They left him in a terrible situation. When is that true? Bizman she'ein sham po'alim liskor. That's as long as there aren't other workers that can come in and replace them. But yesh sham po'alim liskor, if there are other workers that could replace them. If he can go and then hire these new workers, then he only has complaints against them that they walked out in the middle of the job. But since he can finish the job in a reasonable fashion with these other workers, then he can complain. The complaint is that you walked out and I have to hire different workers. It's a tircha for me. But in terms of monetary loss, he's not sustaining any monetary loss. And there's an important tosfot over here, which I hinted to in the Mishnah, which is Kasha the Ri. The Ri wants to understand here, why does this Braita start out in a case where the Balabayit or the workers, he too is Zedzeh, they misled each other, Elhem Zelzeh Letaromet, where they only can have complaint against each other. Why is it that they only have a complaint? He says, HaKaimelan K'Rabbi Meir D'Dain Dinidi Garmi. We Paskin like Rabbi Meir, who says that when you have Garmi, which is that there's a direct correlation between the loss and your activity or your actions, even though it's not yashir, I mean, it's not a masa, it's an action that you did, but whatever you did do resulted directly in the fact that he was sustained losses here, then why shouldn't they have to pay the losses? Because then, in that case, they caused him a loss, they should be responsible for the loss. The answer is that when the balabayit walks out and says, I don't have work for you, that the workers have an ability to get hired again. They're not going to lose the whole day's wages because they can find replacement work. Their complaint against him is that they're going to have to work harder now to find the work to replace the work that he was supposed to give them. So that's the complaint here, is the fact that they have to work harder to garner the same salary. The fact that he's not responsible for paying them is because they find other work or other opportunities. And again, we saw that towards the end of the Braita, which is if you can hire someone else to replace the workers, then in the end, all you have is taromet. All you have is a complaint. Because of the fact that you have a way to finish the work, you have a way to deal with the issue without sustaining monetary loss, and that's why you have a taromet. But what's indicated from the Balei HaTosafot is if he does sustain losses here, he does have recourse against these workers because of Dinei Degarmi, and that he can go and demand that they pay for the hefsei, they pay for the losses that he sustained in these situations. On the other hand, the Maharum Rutenberg disagrees with this Balei HaTosafot and suggests that the din of Dinei Degarmi only applies when an individual sustains losses, not in what is called Miniat Revach, where a person stops the person from benefiting or profiting in that situation. And therefore, in this case, the Baal HaBayit would not be chayav to the Poalim because it was Miniat Revach and not necessarily a cause of loss. Although in reverse, it actually might not be true, depending on the scenarios that we discussed in the Braita, as to whether for the Baal HaBayit it's just Miniat Revach, or it's really a sustained loss, as to whether there would be Dinei Degarmi. On the other hand, Rektzot HaChoshen mentions the fact that even within this distinction of the Maharam Mirutenberg, there might be a finer distinction to make, which is that when it is a clearly defined loss of profits, that in that case we treat it like Hefseid, like a loss, and you would be able to reclaim it from Dinei Degarmi. When it's a more amorphous type of lost profit or lost opportunity, over there you wouldn't have a right to collect it in Dinei Degarmi. And therefore, in our case, where it's very clear what the loss is, either because the wages that these individuals would have earned, or in the case where the employer will lose whatever it is that he's working on, if that case, if we can make a clear calculation as to what the loss is, it would be subject to Dinei Degarmi. And then you would have to go back to the answers that Tosafot offered. So now that would be the third possible answer for how to explain the Mishnah, that when we say Hitu Zedzeh, that was a scenario in which the employer or the employees misled each other. And then we dealt here in the Braita with the different possible permutations of how the misleading happened as to who is responsible. Right? Tana Tana Kamei de Rav. We're saying over a Braita in front of Rav. Noten lahem scharan mishalem. That they give them the full payment, the full price. Amar le, Chabibi Amar, my beloved one said, usually that refers to Rabbi Chia, who was Rav's uncle, and Rav referred to him as Chabibi, that term of endearment towards Rabbi Chia. And so therefore the Tano, who's bringing this Braita down, Rav responds and says, my uncle Rabbi Chia said, Amar, ilu ana havai, levin lehen. If I was there, I wouldn't give them anything. Elike poel batel. But like a worker who is willing to sit out the day and be unemployed. How much is a person willing to do nothing during the day versus being employed in heavy labor or a difficult job? So in that case, obviously he wants to get paid something, but he's willing to take a discount to the normal price to be able to stay home and not have to do anything. So Rabbi Chia said, you only pay them poel batel. And you're telling me the Braita says that they get paid in full, which means that they get paid whatever they were promised. Va'alaktani. And doesn't it say on that Braita there was a qualification? Isn't it clear that there's a difference between a hauler that's fully loaded versus a hauler that's coming back empty? Versus someone has to work to garner their wages versus someone who is just sitting around doing nothing to get paid. Gemara says, lo semu kamei. The problem was that they didn't finish off reading the Braita. The Braita over here does say that you get paid in full, scharo mushulam. But then the next line is the qualification saying, what does it mean to get paid fully? It means to get paid fully is that with the discount for the fact that you're not having to work here. That's exactly what Rabbi Chia said. So then why did Rav say that? Why did he interject and say Rabbi Chia said otherwise? It's because the person who was reading over the Braita didn't finish the Braita. He only said the first line about Skarum Mishalem, to which Rav objected. But then when you really look at the remainder of the Braita, the remainder of Braita is in concert with what Rabbi Chia said, which is you don't pay them full salary, you pay them the salary you would have given them had they been willing to sit out the day or they were willing to transport without having to carry anything. Some say that he did finish the Braita in front of him. And this is what Rav said. Chavivi Amar, Ihavai Ana, Loave Yavinan Lehe Klau. So had I been there, I wouldn't have paid them at all. Vatamar Kapoel Batel. And you say that they get paid like someone who's willing to sit out the day and not work? Elikasha. Well, then there's a problem. Now you have a steerer between Rabbi Chia and the Braita. Rabbi Chia says they shouldn't get paid at all. The Braita is saying they should at least get paid by like somebody who is unemployed. It doesn't have to work for it. It says Lokasha. Had the Sire the Are mid the Orta? Question is, did they tour the land or they did not tour the land? Rashi explains over here, took the Poalim there the night before to show them the work that was going to be need to be done. And they didn't realize that it was moist. Or maybe that night it rained. Then they don't get any payment. Deha chazu inhu gufayu. They themselves saw the status of the land. V'amad kein nistakru. And they were hired based on that. So there they have no recourse against the individual because there was no misleading them about what the status of the land was. If they were there the night before and saw how moist it was, and they realized maybe it's not going to need to be watered the next morning, then it's their problem if they accepted the work and then get there and it's already moist. Or if it rained that night, we say, mazlayu garam, it was their bad luck, and they lose out on doing the work the next morning. On the other hand, if he did not take them to the land the night before, then it's the Baal HaBayit's responsibility to let them know it's moist or it's not going to need watering, because there is no way that they could have assessed that situation if they weren't there. And so what Rashi says is that if he takes them on a tour of the land the night before, it's really their issue because they understand what the land looks like. They understand what the situation is. On the other hand, if he didn't take them there the night before, it's the Baal HaBayit's responsibility to notify them. And if he doesn't notify them, then it's his problem. And then they get paid like a poel batel. If you look in the Gra says that the Rambam learns differently than Rashi. Rashi says over here that it was the poalim that were taken for a tour of the land. Rambam Mefereish, Baal HaBayit, Biker Batzmo, Mibaharif, that the Baal HaBayit himself visited the land, and therefore when he saw that it needed the work, so then he hired the workers. And what was he supposed to do? He saw it. But if he didn't visit the land, then in a sense, he's a little bit of a pusheya because he didn't realize it was already moist. They went ahead and hired the workers. It's his problem because he didn't check it out. He should have checked it out the night before. And the fact that he didn't check it out, therefore he has to pay them, k'yoshev u'batel. But that explained the difference between Rabbi Chiya's statement, which is the worker's bad luck, versus the case where the Baal HaBayit will have to at least pay them, k'poel batel. And that will depend on the amount of information that was garnered the night before. Again, for the Rambam, it means the Baal HaBayit needed to get that information by visiting or not visiting the property. And according to Rashi, it is that the Poalim have the information by visiting the property or not visiting the property. Kiadam Arova, which is similar to what Rova says, Haiman da agar agire the rafko. If someone hires individuals to go ahead and work the field to dig ditches, that's what we saw before in the Gemara. You hire them to dig irrigation ditches, vata mitra, and then it rained, umal yamayo, and it filled it with water. So now he doesn't need them to dig the ditches anymore because it rained and he got the water that he needed. Or even if he still wanted them to dig the ditches, the water, the rain made the ground muddy and unworkable, and therefore they can't dig the ditches because of the status of the land at that point in time. Isayri l'ari miorta, if they toured the property the night before, say to the Poalim, then it is the Poalim's loss, because the fact that it rained, the Baal HaBayit can say, or the employer can say, it was your bad luck that caused it. Lo sayre l'are me'urta, they didn't tour the land the night before, say to the Baal HaBayit, then it is on the Baal HaBayit's head, because they could say to him, we don't know which land particularly that you hired us for. We have no idea what you had in mind, and since we don't know what you had in mind, we might have thought it was another property, and therefore it's your issue that it rained that night. Bamarova, Haiman da ogir agure the davlo, someone who hires people to irrigate his field, va'ata mitra, and it rained. Pseida the poalim. Then it's the loss of the workers, because that is min hashamayim, it's their bad mazel, and therefore they lose out. Ata naro, if on the other hand the river came and watered the field, say to the Baal HaBayit, then it's the problem of the Baal HaBayit. So since the water of the river overflowed and filled all the irrigation ditches and then watered the field, that is something that he should have been aware of, or something that he would have known, not the Poalim. And therefore, batel, he has to pay them like someone who is employed, but employed in an easier type of employment where they don't have to work on that day. So in the first scenario where we say that if it rains, the Poalim lose out, Tosafot questions that from a sugya in Gitin, where an individual hires his sharecroppers in order to water the field. And he says, you're a sharecropper on this field. Everybody else hires their sharecroppers in order to draw water three times, and they get a quarter of the profits. But I want you guys to draw water, water the field four times, and you guys will get one third of the profits of the field. So he actually hired them to do more work on the field than a normal sharecropper would do, but he compensated them for that by paying them a higher share of the profits. So then they go ahead and they water the field three times like anyone else. When they go to water it the fourth time, instead of having needed to water it or irrigate it, it rains. So the question is, then at that point, what is their claim against the Baal HaBayit? They'll say, we were willing to do the four, therefore we should get the higher profitability. The Baal Bayit says, then you didn't in the end have to do the four, so you should only get the lower profitability because you didn't end up having to do the four times. So it's a machloka between Rab Yosef and Rab over there. Rab Yosef over there says, halo dala. In the end, they didn't have to do the fourth time, so therefore they should be like a regular sharecropper and only receive 25% of the profits. Rabba says it didn't need to be watered, but they did whatever they were asked to do, and therefore they should be able to make their claim for the higher profitability and get the 33 1/3% profit sharing and not the 25%. And generally, when it's Rabba v'Rav Yosef, halacha k'Rabba, which would indicate when it rains, it's to the benefit of the Poalim, and not to their detriment, versus an argumar here where Rava says when it rains, it's the bad mazel of the Poalim. So he says, Yesh lamar, the davka baris, that situation in Gitin is because it was a sharecropper. Sharei the karka barisut, noten lo hashalish, afilu ati mitra. In that case, he still has to pay him the higher profit sharing, even if it rains, misafek deshema lo ati. Because that's part of the risk of the original agreement, which is that these Poalim, if there's a necessity, will draw the fourth time. And so therefore, the fact that they put themselves in that position where they would have had to draw a fourth time had it not rained, then they do garner the full profitability or profit sharing, even though it rained and that benefited them, because that was the nature of the original transaction. Right, so over here, when you're talking about Poalim, when you're talking about day laborers, he's not paying them for the entirety of the job or the risk undertaken. He's paying them for the particular work for that particular day. If there's no necessity for that particular work, it rained, then he doesn't have to compensate them. And so Tosfot says over here, the reason the Poalim, we say it's their bad luck, is because of the fact that they are Poalim. They are day laborers, and the only thing they're hired to do is to do this particular work. If that work's no longer necessary, then they don't get paid. The Aris is much more of a relationship that exists over a whole period of time. He's going to work the field, he's going to plant the field, he's going to do a lot of investment in the field in order to garner the profit sharing in the back end. As part of that deal, if you offer him a higher profit sharing for accepting more work, that is a part of the deal. Even at the end, he does not need to do the work because of the fact that it's a whole relationship. It's not just about those particular time, particular waterings of the field. Whether it's three or four, yes, that's the original premise for the higher profit sharing. But in the end, even if he doesn't have to do the work, the idea was he hired them. If the possibility existed that they need to do a fourth time, they would have done it. And therefore, the rain is to their benefit and not like here where the rain is to the detriment of the workers. Or others make a much more simple distinction, which is by the Aris, he is a partner in the field. And therefore, when it rains, it's to the benefit of both the owner and the Aris because they are both quasi-owners of the field at this point. Now then, by the Poel, where he has no vested interest in the field itself, when it rains, it's the good mazel of the Baal HaBayit and to the detriment of the Poel, and that would explain the distinction between the case in Gitin and our case over here. Then Tosfot also points out that there was an alternate Gir Seir, which is Acha Mitra B'Laila. It rained overnight, Pseida L'Poalim. So Tosfot adds in the word Laila, and he says, the Sfarim de Garsi B'Laila, that it rained at night, Tzrech Lamar de Mayri B'Seira L'Ayre. It has to be a case where they walked the field. Because the low sire, if they didn't walk the field, Ovi say to the Poalim, then it wouldn't have been the loss of the Poalim. Kedama Rava, like Rava just said before, with the case of Rivka, where they were coming to dig the ditches, or to hold the land. So therefore, it is the same scenario, Tosfot says, and what's the Chiddush in this part of the statements of Rava? The answer is that the other half, if Ati Naro, that is the problem of the Baal HaBayit. So it's the Seifa that's the Chiddush, not the Reisha, because the Reisha then is identical to the other case. It's a case where they were sire the Ira, they already walked the field, and then it rained. So then it's the problem of the Poalim. The other possibility, Tosfot says, is Ve'od Yishtamar, Dehocha Gabik Davla, Afilo Lo Sairi, Avi Pseida the Poalim. By the case of the watering or irrigating of the field, even if they didn't walk the field, it's the problem of the Poalim. And that is because you can make an assumption. When it comes to digging the ditches in the field, not everybody knows the nature of the field or what the field's like. And therefore, if it rains, they're not certain as to whether the work can be done or cannot be done unless they have toured the land. So therefore, if they turn the land, then it becomes their problem because they know or they accept the possibility that it might rain and cause them not to be able to work. On the other hand, by the case of irrigating the field, everybody knows that if it rains, you don't need to irrigate the field because most fields are then watered if it rained. And so if that's the case, then the workers, even if they didn't tour the field, know that they're at risk for the rain, and if the rain comes, then they would lose out, it would be their bad mazel, even though they never toured the property. Although, it seems that the Ramban and the Ravid connect this machloket to a different issue, which is that, according to the Ravid, once they have begun the work during the day, if it rains, it's actually to their benefit, and it's the loss of the balabayit. Whereas, if it rained the night before, that's the pseida of the poalim. And so for that reason, the girsa needs to be that it rained the night before. On the other hand, for the Ramban and others who believe that that's not the case, then the girsa could be that even if it rained in the middle of the day, that the poalim would lose out, because even if they started in the work, if it's something that's unforeseen or something that they should have considered before they started work, it is their loss and not the loss of the balabayit. And therefore, for the Ramban and others, it's okay to have the girsa be that it was b'emtzayom. Someone hired individuals to water the field. And halfway through the day, the river stopped flowing. If the river normally does not stop flowing, it's the loss of the workers, because we just said that that is bad mazel. If it, on a regular interval or a regular occurrences, the river stops flowing, if the workers are from the local area, then it's the loss of the workers, because they had to be aware of the fact that that could happen as well, that the river could stop flowing in the middle of the day. If they are not members of the city or of the local area, then because then the balabayit should have been aware or notified to them of the possibility that the river would stop. The fact that they all of a sudden met with this situation, that the river stopped, that is not their problem, because they were not aware that this could happen. And Tosua points out that the reason that it might have stopped in the middle of the day, or it's normal for it to stop in the middle of the day, is it's a lightly flowing river. And many fields or many workers are drawing water from this river in order to water their fields, or maybe sometimes they divert the water into their fields in order to fill up their irrigation ditches. So this is something that, number one, can be expected. And it's a likely scenario that as you move through the day, there's more chance that the river would cut off, because more and more people are using the water from the river. That's why it talks about the middle of the day rather than the middle of the night, is because that's a more likely scenario. And even though in the previous case, the Gemara didn't differentiate between whether the people were local or was normal for the river to stop, not to stop, all those sorts of things, because over here, there's no way for the workers to know how the river would interact with the irrigation ditches that are there. That's something only the balabayit would have known, not the workers. And therefore, it is the problem of the balabayit. In our scenario, the stopping of the river affects their ability to do the work. It has nothing to do with his field in particular. And therefore, Rava here differentiates between the knowledge of the workers as to the vagaries of the river, because it makes a difference in their ability to complete the work. Vamarava, Haiman da Oger Agure Lavidta, Vashalim Avidta Bapagudyoma. An individual hires these people to come and work, and the work is completed halfway through the day. So I Leavidita de Nechamina, Inami de Kabata. If he has work that is easier than the work that he originally hired them for, or something of equivalent type of work, Mifakedo, then he can demand that they engage in that work. The Kashamina, if he only has work that is more burdensome, more difficult than the work that he hired them for, lo mifkadu, he cannot demand that they engage in that work. Noten lahem scharan mishalem. And he has to pay them the full salary that he had offered to them, because he hired them for the work for the whole day. The fact that the work finished early is his issue. Amai, v'leitiv lehu kapol batel. Why does he have to pay them the full salary? Why doesn't he have to pay them like a worker that doesn't have to work the second half of the day? They worked hard for the first half of the day. He'll pay them their 50% of their salary. For the other 50% of their salary, they should be willing to take a discount, because they're getting paid as if they worked, even though they didn't work. We're talking about the schleppers in Mechuzah. Mechuzah is the city of Rava. And these schleppers, or the way the Rambam terms it is, chofrei adama, these people who worked and dug the land, they needed to be engaged in work to keep up their strength. If they stopped at any point, or they were out of work for half a day, it actually was to their detriment, because then they weakened, or they lost their momentum in doing these things, and therefore actually they preferred to be engaged in work rather than to be sitting home. And that's why you have to pay them their full amount of the value of the work they did, is because for them, being Yosheva Batel is actually more expensive, because they'd rather be engaged in the work to keep up their strength or their physical condition so they can continue to engage in this type of work. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots about a third of the way down on Ayin Zayin Amud Aleph.